Hello, this is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, April 15th. Today on the front page, we have a photo of South Shores Elementary School third grader Brenelia O'Neill repotting a pansy to take home during Plant Day at the Andreas Ag Academy in Decatur on Monday, April 13th. She looks very happy. From Decatur, students dig plant sciences. From Valerie Wells, kids learn about life cycles and take a flower pot home. Elizabeth Noble, who prefers to be called Elle, has a garden at home and helps her grandmother with her garden, too. Last summer, I picked tomatoes off the plant and ate them, said the South Shores School third grader. So she felt right at home at Plant Day, held at the Decatur Andreas Ag Academy. The event began last year, said Eternity Jeffro, Dawson Civic Leadership Institute program coordinator, who coordinated and planned Plant Day. Last year, she had two schools, and because the feedback was so positive this year, she invited seven schools, with 400 third graders total, to come to the Ag Academy to learn about the life cycle of plants and take home a flower that they repotted themselves, with some help from the adults. She hopes to expand the program again next spring. Watching their faces light up every moment has been rewarding, Jeffro said. Students not only get a hands-on learning experience, but also get a light lunch and take their own flower home, making the event even more memorable. South Shore's third grade teacher, Lacey Wood, said students have been learning about life cycles in science at school, and coming to the Ag Center not only gets them out of the classroom, which helps pique their interest, it shows them science can be fun. They're getting more experience working in the soil and being outdoors, Wood said. It can be fun with the coloring and then getting to work with the plants. Plants can be calming for some of them. One of the life cycle lessons is that the kids are given a picture to color with a large flower on it. They themselves are the flower and they are told to fill in the petals with the things that help them thrive. Flowers need water and sunshine. What do children need? It's entirely up to the kids to write down the things they consider important to them individually. It may seem like a simple thing, Jeffro said, but it makes a lasting impact, and most importantly, the kids have the best time, and I'm looking forward to bringing back Plant Day next year. The event was sponsored by United Way and Rotary, and Leadership Institute staff bought flats of pansies for the children to take home, trying to choose colors that meant something to each school. Pansies are hardy and easy to care for, and the students received booklets to take home with instructions on their care. Kylie Johnston's family has flowers in their front yard, but she said, and though she doesn't help take care of them, she was learning to at the event. We're learning about the plant life cycle, she said. This gets them away from the classroom and also gives them a chance to engage in a different way, Jeffro said. We have a second photo on the front page of school third grader Carter Oberheim repotting a flower after learning about the plant life cycle. Now from local news. New Chick-fil-A construction underway, Forsyth. A fence is up and much of the former Applebee's building is already down as construction began this week on a Chick-fil-A restaurant in Forsyth. Some final details were approved by the village board in January, clearing the way for the new restaurant, which will be located along US 51 and near Hickory Point Mall. We are excited by the prospect of joining this neighborhood where each locally owned and operated restaurant creates 80 to 120 jobs, the company said in a previous statement. The Applebee's site has been vacant for more than a year following sanitation issues that prompted the Macon County Health Department Board to revoke the business's food permit. From Decatur, drop-offs set for paint, electronics, recycling. Macon County Environmental Management Department are hosting collection days, accepting paint and electronics through September. The drop-off location is at the Recycle Center, 151 West Wood Street, Decatur. Dates and times are 8 a.m. to noon on Tuesdays and noon to 4 p.m. Thursdays. Saturday drop-off days are once a month from 8 a.m. to noon. The first will be April 18th. No fee is required for paints, stains, and varnish containers, but must be in the labeled original containers. The limit is 20 containers or a combination of the three per vehicle. A limit of 7 TVs and or monitors will be accepted with a $10 fee for each. No more than 5 microwaves will be accepted with a $5 fee for each. For more information about acceptable items, visit www.makinggreen.com or call 217-425-4505. Rock Gem Show returns this weekend in Decatur. The Rockhounds of Central and Southern Illinois will host the annual Rock and Gem Show April 18th and 19th at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. The event will be from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday. Admission is $4 for adults. Veterans and children ages 12 and under are free. Rocks, minerals, fossils, and jewelry will be on display, as well as dealers' exhibits, demonstrations, rock and mineral identification. Other activities will include a silent auction, a 50-50 raffle, and a kids' area. For more information, call 217-791-3512. From Sullivan, program to tackle concerns about falling. Have you turned down a chance to go out with family or friends because you were concerned about falling? Have you cut down on a favorite activity because you might fall? If so, a matter of balance. Managing concerns about falls is a program for you. The program will be held on Friday, May 8th through June 26th from 1:15 to 3:15 p.m. at the Moultrie County Senior Center, 113 East Jefferson Street, Sullivan. It is offered by Catholic Charities of Decatur to anyone 60 and over. Workbooks and refreshments will be provided. A matter of balance is designed to reduce the fear of falling and increase activity levels among older adults. Participants learn to set realistic goals to increase activity, change their environment to reduce fall risk factors, and learn simple exercises to increase. Contact Carol Logan at 217-428-3458, extension 231, to register or for more information. Class size is limited. Fly kites with Kiwanis groups on Saturday. The Decatur Kiwanis Clubs are partnering with the Decatur Park District to sponsor Decatur Kiwanis Kite Day on Saturday, April 18th. It will be held from noon to 4 p.m. at Sinewick Park, which is located behind Muffley School and along South 32nd Street. Free kite kits will be available to the first 100 children, ages 12 and under, and Kiwanis members will be on hand to help assemble kites. Everyone is welcome to bring their own kites to fly. Join us for some good, clean, outdoor fun with your family, said Doug Warren and Karen Civils, Kite Day Committee Chairs. Kiwanis is a global organization of clubs whose members and partners are dedicated to improving the lives of children. In the Decatur area, there are two Kiwanis clubs, Golden K and Early Bird, as well as two high school key clubs at Mount Zion and St. Teresa. We also have another photograph from our article on the front page about Plant Day. Eternity Jeffro handing a flower to South Shore's third grader Maximus McGinn. From our food page, we have perfect pairings. Classic spring ingredients shine when partnered with deliciously creamy burrata. From Jean Marie Brownson, Tribune Content Agency. Gardeners itch for spring weather to get outside and plant. Cooks like myself prefer to stay inside and whip up foods loaded with classic spring ingredients and flavors. Vegetables such as new potatoes, peas, and asparagus. Tender chive stalks and mint sprigs as soon as they appear in the garden, followed by cilantro on everything. Tie all of those harbingers of spring together with bright sunshiny lemon. Most lemons in this country come from California, where they are harvested nearly year-round, which means this aromatic tangy fruit can be used in abundance to lend a sweet tart character to almost anything. Consider a tall glass of ice water with a squeeze of lemon and a gently crushed mint sprig while you cook. Pair all of that spring goodness with the timeless indulgence of rich, creamy burrata cheese, and indeed life is good. Burrata resembles fresh mozzarella in that it is soft, fresh, and sold packed in brine. Gently remove the ball from the brine so it doesn't split open until you are ready. Once split, the rich and creamy interior will spill out of its tender mozzarella shell, perfect for scooping up with bread. Surround the burrata balls with lemon slices that have been sautéed with aromatic coriander seeds, a bit of chili, and plenty of artichoke hearts. Drizzle all the flavorful pan liquids over the cheese, then break it open to scoop up onto sliced bread. Serve this casual appetizer with a glass of cold rosé. Alternatively, break open a ball of burrata over a bowl full of peas, asparagus, and pasta for a light, fresh springtime eating. I like to start this meal with a French 75 cocktail, fresh lemon juice, gin, simple syrup, and chilled sparkling wine. It's perfect sipping while we wait for the first garden daffodils and hyacinth to grace the table. Complete recipes for pasta with burrata, lemon and spring vegetables, and burrata with artichokes and sautéed lemons are available on Section B Food page. From our Nation and World page, Immigration, Jan Wolf, Reuters. Court protects president. Trump appointees stop probe into whether he violated judge's order. In a victory for Donald Trump, a U.S. appeals court on Tuesday blocked a judge from conducting an investigation into whether the Republican president's administration willfully violated a judicial order directing them to stop deportation flights of Venezuelan immigrants to El Salvador. A three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit faulted U.S. District Judge James Boasberg in a 2-1 ruling in his standoff with the administration officials over the limits of presidential power. The D.C. Circuit decided that Boasberg encroached on the autonomy of the executive branch by demanding sworn testimony from administration officials to determine whether they purposely defied his March 2025 court order to turn around aircraft that were removing the Venezuelans from the United States. The district court proposes to probe high-level executive branch deliberations about matters of national security and diplomacy, Circuit Judge Naomi Rao wrote, referring to Boasberg. Boasberg's inquiry, known as a contempt proceeding, was a clear abuse of discretion, Rao wrote. Such criminal contempt proceedings can result in fines or other forms of censure. Rao was joined by Circuit Judge Justin Walker in Tuesday's decision, with Circuit Judge J. Michelle Childs in dissent. Rao and Walker are both Trump judicial appointees. Childs was appointed by Democratic former President Joe Biden. The dispute arose as part of a lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of Venezuelan men deported by the Trump administration under the Alien Enemies Act, with the plaintiffs arguing that the administration acted unlawfully with the deportation flights. The 1798 law, which has been invoked rarely in U.S. history, gives presidents broad powers to detain and deport citizens of nations that are at war with the United States or have launched an invasion of U.S. territory. Boasberg ruled against Trump's administration in multiple cases. The president called the judge a radical left lunatic as well as a troublemaker and agitator. The Venezuelan men at the center of the litigation were released from a Salvadoran prison last summer and returned to Venezuela as part of a prisoner swap. Boasberg concluded that the administration appeared to have acted in bad faith when it hurriedly assembled three deportation flights at the same time that he was conducting emergency court proceedings to assess the legality of the effort. From Nicole Winfield, Associated Press, Annaba, Algeria. Pope Leo XIV visits the archaeological site of Hippo Tuesday in Annaba, Algeria, on the second day of an 11-day apostolic journey to Africa. Pope follows his spiritual father. Pontiff makes first trip to Africa as feud with Trump simmers. Pope Leo XIV walked Tuesday in the footsteps of his spiritual father, St. Augustine, making a pilgrimage to the archaeological ruins in Algeria, where the 5th-century titan of early Christianity lived, died, and wrote some of the most important works in Western thought. Leo's visit to Annaba, the modern-day Hippo, was a spiritual homecoming for the American Pope on his second full day in Algeria. He arrived Monday on a first-ever papal visit, against the backdrop of his calls for peace that sparked a feud with U.S. President Donald Trump over the war in Iran. It's the first stop on Leo's four-country Africa tour. The Pope arrived at the ruins in a rainstorm and with tight security, with sharpshooters positioned around the site and policemen stationed every few yards along roads leading to it. Leo proclaimed himself a son of St. Augustine on the night of his election and cited Augustine prolifically in his first year, making it clear that he's the guiding inspiration of Leo's pontificate. For this trip, Leo is focusing on Augustine as a bridge builder as he aims to press a message of peace and Christian-Muslim coexistence. God's heart is torn apart by wars, violence, injustice, and lies, Leo later told a small gathering of nuns and elderly people in Annaba. The visit also draws attention to the North African origins of Augustine, who spent only 5 years in Italy, but is often seen through a Eurocentric lens as one of the great Western thinkers of Christianity for his writings on truth, evil, creation, and grace. Leo's Augustinian religious order was founded in Italy in the 13th century, inspired by the saint. Leo made clear en route to Algeria and in remarks to Algerian authorities how deeply personal and important this visit is to him because of his spiritual connection to St. Augustine. He had visited twice before while he was superior of the Augustinian order. This journey, which is very special for several reasons, was supposed to be the first of my pontificate, Leo told reporters on the papal plane. As early as last May, I had said that on my first journey I would like to visit Africa. Several people immediately suggested Algeria because of St. Augustine. In the end, other trips intervened, but he kept the appointment. From Reuters, Trump administration will refund importers. U.S. Supreme Court struck down $166 billion in tariffs as unlawful. On Monday, President Donald Trump's administration plans to launch the system it will use to issue refunds to American importers for $166 billion, the companies paid in tariffs that the U.S. Supreme Court struck down in February as unlawful. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said in a court filing Tuesday that it completed the development of the initial phase of the refund system. The system will consolidate refunds so importers will receive one electronic payment with interest when applicable, rather than processing refunds on an entry-by-entry basis. The Supreme Court ruled Trump overstepped his authority in imposing sweeping global tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, a 1977 law meant for use in national emergencies. Tuesday's filing said that as of April 9th, 56,497 importers completed the process to receive electronic refunds for tariffs affected by the court's ruling. After the Supreme Court's decision, importers sued for refunds in the Court of International Trade, which is monitoring the development of the refund system. Now from our opinion page, our topic is leashing AI. And our first column is from Paul Steidler. Steidler's a senior fellow with the Lexington Institute, a public policy think tank in Arlington, Virginia. He wrote this for Inside Sources. Federal government best for consistent safeguards. The main thing is to keep the main thing, said Stephen Covey, a renowned organizational consultant. With artificial intelligence legislation, what matters most is common sense. That means not killing or stagnating the benefits of AI with cumbersome and contradictory laws in 50 states on how AI models develop and run. Sensible federal guidelines are key. Both parties in Congress recognize that AI provides profound benefits to American society, including better health care, reducing tedious tasks, and spawning discoveries. To get there, AI development cannot be handicapped by regulatory uncertainty, which is the most likely way to sabotage AI's bright future. Hundreds of state legislative proposals across the country would require tech companies to produce voluminous state reports and modify their technology to comply with state mandates. This encompasses sharing how models work, how they were tested and evaluated, and what type of energy they use, among many other factors. Big technology companies can pay for these legal and regulatory costs, though billions will go to bureaucrats and lawyers instead of being invested in AI. Left unchecked, these state laws will stifle and end AI innovation at many mid-size and small enterprises. American technological progress and leadership will slow. If a bunch of states had regulated the production of innovations such as steel, electricity, and the automobile, as some are trying to do now with AI model development, those technologies would have taken many more years to come to fruition. We might still be riding horses over wooden bridges with lanterns. The White House on March 20th issued a widely anticipated framework to govern AI. It also issued a December 11th executive order stopping the states from making their own AI rules. Preempting states from taking action on certain things is a core legal doctrine of the Constitution. Federal law takes precedent over conflicting state laws. This promotes interstate commerce by preventing a balkanization of laws from stifling technology and innovation. It has been central to America's 250 years of prosperity. The Trump administration's framework includes several important points, including that Congress should preempt state AI laws that impose undue burdens to ensure a minimally burdensome national standard consistent with those recommendations, not 50 discordant ones. Preemption must ensure that state laws do not govern areas better suited to the federal government or act contrary to the United States' national strategy to achieve global AI dominance. The framework covers many areas, including energy issues, job training, and copyrights. Indeed, AI affects many areas of American life. With preemption, states still have considerable leeway to govern AI, including how it affects insurance rates, which are regulated by states. Also, commerce laws already govern AI. Fraud committed with AI is still fraud, subject to rigorous prosecution. To curtail regulatory uncertainty, the United States needs AI federal rules, particularly on model development, to be enacted this year. Not executive orders or study groups, laws. Core components of the legislation should give the National Institute of Standards and Technology a clearer, more powerful role in determining the best practices in AI modeling. Stronger whistleblower protections for employees at tech companies are needed. Since the White House announcement, Washington's political tribes have gone to their own silos on AI legislation. Conservative groups are gathering together. Democrats are caucusing and meeting with stakeholders to hear their priorities. It seems like every issue related to AI is now in legislative play. That may prove helpful in galvanizing policymakers to do something legislatively about AI. Without preempting the states, costs and delays in AI development rise needlessly, placing an unnecessary drag on our economy and bright future. Preemption legislation gets us past that. Now from our National and World Digest. DOJ seeks to toss group leaders' riot convictions. Washington. The Justice Department asked a federal appeals court Tuesday to throw out the seditious conspiracy convictions of Proud Boys and Oath Keeper leaders who were sentenced to prison terms for leading members of the far-right extremist groups in attacking the U.S. Capitol to keep President Donald Trump in office more than 5 years ago. Trump commuted the sentences of several Proud Boys and Oath Keepers leaders last year in a sweeping act of clemency for all of the more than 1,500 defendants charged in the January 6, 2021 attack that injured more than 100 police officers. The Justice Department's request would go further, erasing all the convictions for the extremist group's leaders, including Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes, who didn't receive pardons last year. Again from Washington, business sentiment sinks to 11-month low. U.S. small business sentiment dropped to an 11-month low in March as a surge in oil prices because of the war in Iran overshadowed the benefits from low taxes, a survey showed. The National Federation of Independent Business said Tuesday its Small Business Optimism Index dropped 3.0 points to 95.8 last month, the lowest level since April 25, and pushed it below its 52-year average of 98. The survey's uncertainty index jumped 4 points to 92, well above its historical average of 68. The survey followed on the heels of news last week from the University of Michigan's surveys of consumers that its consumer sentiment index plunged to a record low in April. Briefly, President Donald Trump called on Republican lawmakers Tuesday to work together to extend FISA 702, a law that allows American spy agencies to surveil foreigners abroad using data drawn from U.S. digital infrastructure before the authorization expires next week. Eric Swalwell. A fifth woman accused Representative Eric Swalwell of sexual misconduct Tuesday after the embattled Democratic congressman from California announced his resignation from the House of Representatives and suspended his campaign for governor. Lana Drews accused Swalwell of drugging and raping her in 2018. Boat strike. The U.S. military struck a boat accused of carrying drugs on the eastern Pacific Ocean on Tuesday, killing four people. The death toll rose to 175 since such operations began in early September. Federal Reserve. According to a financial disclosure filing released Tuesday, Kevin Warsh, a former Federal Reserve governor President Donald Trump chose by to lead the central bank, holds assets worth more than $100 million, which would make him the wealthiest Fed leader if confirmed. Nordic defense. Norway and Ukraine will strengthen their bilateral defense cooperation, including by producing Ukrainian drones in the Nordic country, the Norwegian government said Tuesday. Norway will support the production of drones in Ukraine, which will share information with Norway. In Turkey, a 19-year-old former student opened fire at a high school Tuesday in Turkey's southeastern province of Sanliurfa, wounding at least 16 people, including students and teachers, before killing himself, the province's governor said. From Reuters in Washington, Treasury chief confident on low core inflation. Administration wants new Fed chair in office as soon as possible. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said Tuesday he was confident that core inflation would continue to go down in the United States despite the Iran war, and repeated his call for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates. Bessent said he could understand if U.S. central bankers wanted to observe economic developments related to the war before they cut rates, adding that it also made sense for U.S. President Donald Trump's nominee as Fed Chair, Kevin Warsh, to lead the next cycle of monetary adjustments. Asked if the Trump administration would accept current Fed Chair Jerome Powell staying in the top spot after his term ends May 15th, if Warsh's nomination was not approved by the Senate by then, Bessent said, "We want Kevin Warsh in as soon as possible." Bessent said Monday the Federal Reserve should wait and see before deciding whether to lower interest rates amid the war in Iran, noting that the U.S. economy was very strong in January and February, but the impetus here is that they will need to cut rates, Bessent said. Today in history, on this date in 1865, Abraham Lincoln died after being shot by John Wilkes Booth at Ford's Theater the previous evening. Andrew Johnson was sworn in as the 17th president hours later. In 1912, on this date, the British luxury liner RMS Titanic sunk in North Atlantic off Newfoundland just over 2.5 hours after hitting an iceberg on its maiden voyage. More than 1,500 people died, 710 survived. In 1947, Jackie Robinson, the first black player to break Major League Baseball's decades-old color barrier, made his official debut with the Brooklyn Dodgers on opening day. The Dodgers defeated the Boston Braves 5-3. In 1955, on this date, Ray Kroc opened the first franchised McDonald's restaurant in Des Plaines, Illinois. In 1974, members of the Symbionese Liberation Army held up a branch of the Hibernia Bank in San Francisco. A member of the group was SLA kidnap victim Patricia Hearst. 2019, fire swept across the top of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris during renovation work on the landmark structure. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, April 15th. Please stay tuned.